I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I'm your host, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space for independent thought, beholden to no party, no politician. Got lots to talk about today. Everything from Russia to, I ran across something yesterday I was not familiar with, foreign policy related. Have you ever heard of the School of the Americas? Now, this is quite a little thing. I figured out a pretty big scam being run on us and many of the people of the world. And, of course, the U.S. foreign policy people are right in smack dab in the middle of it, so that'll be interesting. We'll probably get to that next hour. Lots of COVID stuff to go over today. I know it feels like it's over to everybody. I believe that this is the time where we have a chance to take a breath, where we need to expose all of the frauds we possibly can so that we don't find ourselves back in the soup again. I don't think they're done with us. They just never release that kind of power. Maybe it fades off. Maybe I'm wrong. But there are still a lot of things that are coming out, news that's coming out about it, and that's why we're not talking about it now. The news that is coming out around COVID, around all the mitigation efforts. I've got a great clip from 2018 about masks, where somebody makes at some big medical confab, explains what masking is actually about. It's not about protecting you from a virus, so these things are valuable too. But the reason we're not talking about these things now is because all of the news that's coming out surrounding COVID or shots or anything else is all bad news, so they're trying to keep it hush-hush. They had their way for 2 years of controlling the narrative, and now the narrative is turning against them, and so they just don't want to talk about it, so we'll talk about it here. Also, I've had a big question about the athletes that are dropping dead or collapsing on the field. I've had a big question. Well, my question's been answered now. We'll take a look at that as well. There's some interesting statistics around what's going on as far as athletes suffering from shot-related injuries. So we got a lot to get to today. There was a standing room only yesterday at the Madison County School Board. That was kind of a nice thing to say. They have finally pretty much filled the about two rows of chairs at the school board meetings. For a while, they had them so spread out, you know, social distancing and all. They've got a full room, a full two rows of chairs, and there was some standing room only. So it was good to see. A lot of parents did show up for the meeting last night. There have been actions taken on some of the books in the library. Lindsey Beckham, who's been kind of leading that fight against those things, along with Dr. Jennifer Miller, both had great speeches where they thanked the school board for taking some action. I know that's a little aggravating. It took too long. It was forming one committee to get another committee to take things under consideration when the vast majority of people would look at the pornography on the shelves of the schools and say, why don't you just go down the row, open it up, if you see this trash in there, throw it into a garbage can and go on with our day. But anyway, they thanked him for taking some action. There was one girl there, and I believe she was a student body president. I didn't catch the school that she was at. She was actually very well-spoken, but she was speaking in terms of in favor of leaving these books on the shelves. She was very well-spoken, I think fairly brave to get up into a room full of adults, many of them who had shown up to try to get these critical race theory and this explicit sexual content out of the school libraries, but she waded into them and delivered a speech. She did acknowledge that she understood where parents were coming from, but she believed that kids 15 to 18, it stifled their creativity, their intellectual curiosity by taking these books off the shelves. There were some flaws in her argument, but she'd be an interesting conversation to have with somebody. Maybe I should try to reach out to her and see if when school is out, she'd like to come on and defend her position. It was interesting, but You know, these are the kinds of people who, you know, young kids rebelling against their parents, disagreeing with their parents. I don't know about you. When I hit 15 years old, my parents didn't know anything anymore. I knew it all. So I've got some sympathy for kids who believe that they know better than the adults around them. And I'll be honest with you, you look across the landscape of what passes as adults in this country sometimes, and you think, well, you know, can they really do much worse? I disagree with her on these books, and I would imagine as she becomes a parent, she may change her minds too, but the views of youth are obviously not shaded with the wisdom of some level of age. So it was an interesting meeting, but it was good to see that a lot of people showed up for the meeting, and hopefully people will continue to stay engaged. There's many more things that need to happen to regain control of the education system for your kids in these local communities. I sure hope there's something going on in Jackson, but so far it doesn't matter about masking or school closures, contact tracing, critical race theory stuff. I've not heard of anything going on in the Jackson School District, which is a real shame. The Jackson School District needs help as bad, or if not much worse, than many of the other school districts as well. So anyway, quotes of the day today. Thomas Paine said, the duty of a true patriot is to protect his country from his government, not from Russia, not from Iran, not from China, not from Venezuela. The duty of a true patriot is to protect his country from its government. That leads me into the that puts me firmly in Thomas Paine's category of true patriot, because that's basically what I do here from a daily basis, is just tell you it's your government that is the problem and not these other countries. Robert Nozick, he's a libertarian thinker. He said taxation of earnings from labor is on par with forced labor. Seizing the results of somebody's labor is equivalent to seizing hours from him and directing him to carry on various activities. Taxation of earnings from labor is on par with forced labor. And I think that's pretty hard to argue the contrary of that. Drudge Report puts out, you know, I look at it, I've just become so frustrated with where we're going and seeing that just so few people understand what has led us to where we are. You know, this is a frustration of mine. I probably repeat it too often. But then I think it's once a quarter, maybe it's once a month, Drudge Report lists out the top media companies. The web-based news race, and they have their list of where people are getting their news. And boy, I tell you what, every single month when I see this thing, it doesn't change a whole lot. People may change from one spot to another. The numbers change, but this is just billions and billions of news views over a media landscape that is really, really probably pretty bad for us. Of course, the first place is always Google News. That's where people get their news, Google News, followed by, and this is still hard to believe at this point, but this is website web searches, CNN, 1,064,053,000 page views on CNN, followed by New York Times, Fox News, Yahoo News, Drudge Report. And, you know, if you go down these things, Google News left, CNN left, New York Times left, Fox News right, Yahoo News left, Drudge, a news aggregator, kind of tilted anti-Trump, but probably still fairly conservative, I guess would be the way you look at it. Washington Post left, CNBC, Wall Street, New York Post. One of the better ones, in my opinion. They have some interesting things that come out that aren't necessarily really partisan. They seem to cover some real news at the New York Post, so it's maybe one of the better ones, but it's an outlier here for sure. USA Today left, BuzzFeed left, Wall Street Journal, Wall Street, Citizens Free Press right, Politico left, Raw Story left, HuffPo left, Breitbart right, TMZ. TMZ. Is one of the 102,969,000 page views on TMZ. That may say more about this list than anybody else. It's right above Zero Hedge, which is certainly one of the better news outlets out there. Probably tilts a little bit right, but I would call it more sane. Used to be a great financial website, but they've really weighed into politics probably too much, followed by NBC, CBS, Daily Beast, ABC, Newsmax, and Daily Wire, meaning all of these news organizations, just about every single one of them, basically have political agendas. And it's really sad. Everybody says, we want just objective news. Just give me the facts. That's just not true. You can look at this. This is billions and billions of page views on the web. And I would imagine there are some out there that will give you the facts. Zero Hedge may be one of the closest ones there, and but they're not at the top of this list. This is the making of the American mind is just a battle of agendas and bubbles. You know, this is a headline today. I looked at Breitbart. Breitbart just does a fantastic job of really showing the insanity of the world on the left. It's not difficult. It's not a heavy lift. But day after day, if you scroll through the Breitbart website, you are going to just be treated by some of the craziest stories. And I would imagine most of them are accurate. My problem with Breitbart is it is right-wing propaganda. It is pro-Israel propaganda, too. They never admit that Israel's ever at fault for anything on Breitbart. They similarly carried water and made excuses for Donald Trump when he did what I believed was contrary to what he campaigned on. So they've got their thing. And today they're running a story, and this is, you know, my pet peeve, but I'll point it out. This is what Breitbart is: Bidenflation. Majority of Americans now worry about maintaining their standard of living. And this is all a story based on the Gallup poll. But again, they're going to phrase this in terms of it just being Joe Biden that created this inflation, which just locks all of the Breitbart viewers. How many were there here? 111,975,300 page views on Breitbart. So that's millions and millions of Americans. It's locking them firmly in a complete misunderstanding of what inflation is. And this is my problem with the partisan sites that try to explain through just cutery exactly what you blame inflation on. But this, you know, I look at this list and it just makes me a huge media outlier. I'm way, 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 way out there. Off by myself. I'll do one more unpopular opinion real quick out of the gates today. We're talking about Republican propaganda. This was Clay Travis. Isn't he one of the guys that's taken over for Rush Limbaugh? I believe Clay is co-hosting with somebody else. I'm sure he does some great stuff. It's, you know, Republican red meat radio. There's no doubt about it. And I'm sure he's right on a whole lot of things. I don't really have a problem with Clay Travis. Don't have a problem with conservative talk radio. I just think it leaves a lot of information out. But Clay Travis tweeted out, "The stock market is tanking again today, meaning we are rapidly approaching the stock market turning negative for the 18 months Joe Biden has been in office. It's truly remarkable how Biden is failing on every possible issue simultaneously. I've never seen anything like it." You know, there's no doubt about it that Joe Biden is a despicable, horrible, corrupt man running this country. There's no doubt about it. But to use the stock market and put this at the feet of Joe Biden, the bond market, the stock market are in multi-year bubbles. The bond market's in a 40-year bubble. It's going to pop on Trump's watch had he gotten reelected as well. So this is just more. It's conditioning to me. And it's a shame. All of these people like Clay Travis or Breitbart have got such a great opportunity to reach so many people, to actually explain to people, to educate people exactly what's going on. The problem is they would have to implicate some of their own. They would have to tell you that Donald Trump was as big a contributor, if not more, up to date. Now, Joe Biden will make inflation significantly worse. But Donald Trump was an incredible contributor to inflation by jawboning the Fed to take interest rates back down to zero and endless money printing, not to mention what took place in 2020 when they increased the entire money supply in the entire history of the United States by, I believe, 20%. Clay Travis, Breitbart, they've all got a good opportunity to actually educate conservative viewers so that maybe the conservatives could take the wheel and actually fix the things that are going wrong, elect the right people who would actually address the problems. But instead, they retreat to partisanship and to cutery, as I call it, just to make sure that everybody stays firmly on their teams. Yeah, just kind of sad, just an observation. When I come back, we'll take a look at this stock market. Today looks like turnaround Tuesday. At least it was when the futures market, when I looked at it earlier today. We may have an update. Got a stack of headlines and a little bit of financial news we'll get to when I come back. You know, I was closing my tabs during the break, and I just looked again at this media list. And really, you know, I'm probably interpreting it. The way I should be interpreting it is not just, you know, being sad that people have been corralled into their bubbles and that every mainstream news organization has an agenda. They're pushing political agendas, and this is what people consume as, air quotes here in the studio, news. But the real moral of the story is that's what people want. You know, I may be like a guy who really enjoyed making buggies for horses as the car was coming around, and I'm just trying to convince her. You just look at the beauty of the buggy. You know, it's harnessing nature and being one with, you know, whatever. And people are just saying, no, you know, people want to go by car now. So every now and then I get an email from somebody that says, you made me think about this. I don't agree with you on everything, but you made me think about it. I never thought about something that that's really all it takes to get me to keep going on what I do, which is really along the lines of Thomas Paine, just warning you about your government across the board. Every agency, basically every politician, both parties. It's all I know how to do. So while it may be more popular to get into the bubble news, I'm incapable of doing it. I'll tell you, I'm just incapable. The stock market, I didn't even look at the markets today. Let's see what they're doing today. Oh yeah, we got a nice little rally going on, particularly in the NASDAQ's up about, what's that? So up almost 2% today, so there is a bit of a relief rally. One of the big investors said he was covering his shorts. So the stock market's having a good day. We'll see how that is. The headlines from yesterday, stocks more ugly. Netflix down 71% year-to-date. Snapchat down 50%. Uber down 45%. Facebook down 42%. Amazon down 35%. Disney down 31%. Tesla down 26%. Google down 22%. Yeah, that's some tech wreckage right there. Bitcoin battered. 40% of investors now underwater. Crypto fad fades. Recession fears grow. And then there was this headline, too, and they repeated it today on the news. Gas prices back near record is what the headline was from yesterday when I pulled this stack of headlines. Today, the news is reporting that we have record high gas prices in the United States. And my question is, why? Now, there are some other, you know, maybe... I just wonder why. And here's why I say I don't understand why. Now, I understand inflation as good as anybody. But the price of a barrel of oil right now is trading at $102, almost $103, $102.71 on, they believe that is WTI, West Texas Intermediate Oil. $102. I actually went back because it was one of those moments when I hear, well, we've got record high gas prices. I feel like I'm insane. How can I be so wrong about something? Because I seem to remember an extended period of time where gas, where oil by the barrel was significantly higher than $102 a barrel. If you remember the financial crisis, we saw $4 gasoline back then. The price of a barrel back then was $130 a barrel. So I actually did took a little bit of time. This is what I do. And I went back and looked at the historic price of a barrel of oil. From August of 2007 to September of 2008, the price of a barrel of oil was higher, sometimes much higher, up around $130 a barrel. So 30% higher than where it is right now. But for some reason right now, gas prices are higher than they were then. A barrel of oil is 30% cheaper, yet gas is more expensive. That doesn't really feel right. Now, I guess there could be some cost in the refining process that would account for some of this, but 30%, I mean, if you get what I'm saying, it feels a little bit like when we did have a spike of the oil barrel of oil price a few weeks ago up to around $130 a barrel. It might have gotten up to $135. It seems like they kind of locked in the high price then, and when it came down 30%, down to around $100 a barrel, and it's traded under $100 a barrel, gas prices didn't really seem to reflect that 30% drop. I didn't see any dollar taken off of gas. It's almost like they tested it and said, well, it looks like they're still paying it. Do we really need to lower gas prices anymore? again, there may be some other forces that I'm not aware of in the refining process. I can't imagine with the kind of lack of economic activity, the lack of ships moving right now, with the cutoffs of supply chains, that we really are seeing a huge demand for oil right now, like we would have seen in a booming economy. Though it doesn't seem like a demand-driven thing for gasoline. I'm just saying, the price of a barrel of oil has been substantially higher for significant periods of time. August 2007 through September 2008, the price of a barrel of oil was higher that entire time, sometimes much higher. The summer of 2009, all the way through the summer of 2014. That's about 5 years oil traded, according to the chart I saw today of WTI. Oil traded from summer of 2009 to the summer of 2014 for 5 years. A price of the barrel of oil traded higher than it's trading right now, yet gas prices now are at record levels. Something seems to stink in that calculation. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I do smell a rat. One last thing I'll do here on the markets. There may be some good news for markets and why the markets are rebounding today. My old friend Jim Cramer, I believe this was yesterday or the day before, someone tweeted this out. Jim Cramer just used the word uninvestable on air regarding growth stocks. Of course, he said back in December of last year that we were about to see a roaring 20s. Now he's faced with what's looking increasingly like a bear market. He realizes he's wrong, so he tries to get on the other side of it. He says, growth stocks, this is a lot of your tech names, are just uninvestable at this level. And the stock market bounces back. If I'm being unclear there, whatever Jim Cramer says, do the opposite. This tweeter said, or tweetist said, last time he said this in context of oil and gas stocks, he bottom-ticked the energy market to the day, meaning he actually went bullish on oil and gas. He went bearish on oil and gas on the day that it actually started its rise. So Jim Cramer, chronically wrong, yet making millions and millions of dollars as the CNBC herder of the investing sheep. So maybe there's some good news. Jim Cramer is soured on growth stocks. That may mean the growth stocks are about to actually do really well. We'll see. When I come back here, some comical and not so comical stuff about COVID. I've got an answer to the question about athletes that have been dropping on the fields. I've always wanted some context to that. We've got the context. A study has been done. We'll cover all that when we come back. Stick around. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. I believe the COVID response was incredibly damaging to humankind, just across the board, worldwide. I don't believe they're done with us, and so I think that some vigilance needs to be undertaken during this, what seems like a bit of a lull in COVID coverage. You know, we get dragged by the nose from story to story. The news coming out around all of the COVID protocols of the COVIDian cult are falling apart. And that's why nobody's talking about these things. The problem is that we need to, first of all, name and shame the people who put us through this and make sure that they never control the levers of power again. They need to be thoroughly discredited, because as long as they stay intact and we ignore all of the studies that are coming out and showing the disastrous effects of everything that they did around COVID, the more likely they are to pop up again in this sixth wave they're already talking about. And there's a lot of studies that are being done, a lot of people around the world, and probably more specifically around the world than even here in the United States, research is being done. So we're going to talk about it here because, you know, the schools need to be on notice. You do not go back and remask our children. We don't care what the case count is. We don't care. We do not care. And I've got something on mask in just a second. Of course, it's something from 2018, before the medical establishment lost its mind. The average doctor suddenly turned his back on 100 years of science and said, oh, yeah, the mask work. You got to wear a mask. Well, they should have known better. Actually, they did know better in 2018. I don't know why they forgot it. But here's one. We'll just start with the funny one. Nothing to see here, of course. Cases of COVID-19 among attendees at the White House Correspondents' Dinner 2 weekends ago continue to mount as the fully vaccinated and boosted, air quotes, elites, who condescended to non-compliant Americans, participated in a super spreader event. According to the White House Correspondents Association President Stephen Portnoy, quote, "We worked hard to publicize our protocols and encourage those eligible to get booster shots in the weeks leading up to the dinner," adding, quote, "Our event implemented protocols that went beyond any guidance or regulation issued by the CDC or the DC Health Department. We wish anyone who may not be feeling well a speedy recovery." So they went above and beyond the CDC protocols, supposedly. And I'm sure that they were very nanny state about this. You had to have a vax and a booster to attend the event. And yet they still ended up with a super spreader event. It's quite interesting to watch these kinds of things because it's the projection of the political class as they accuse everybody else of super spreader events in Sturgis or college football. None emerge, but they have one little get together and they all leave infected. And we know why, because we've done studies here that show those people who have had a shot, the more shots you get, the more likely you are now, studies are showing, to contract COVID. The more likely you are to contract COVID. Of course, the White House Correspondents' Dinner is especially humorous because at that dinner, Joe Biden said this.
"We're here to show the country that we're getting through this pandemic. Plus, everyone had to prove they were fully vaccinated and boosted. So if you're at home watching this and you're wondering how to do that, just contact your favorite Fox News reporter. They're all here, vaccinated and boosted. All of them."
And the epilogue to that event is, as reported, cases continue to mount from what became a super spreader event. But he's right, you know. I know that was a dig at basically Trump supporters and their love for Fox News. But Fox News has been pushing this shot, save Tucker Carlson, pretty much across the board. So same thing. Another study. And I always want you to listen to where these studies are coming from. A consequential new study out of Germany shows the number of people suffering from serious complications after receiving the COVID, air quotes around it, vaccine is 40 times higher than previously known. Despite these shocking new revelations, self-proclaimed pandemic expert Bill Gates proudly and falsely boasted on France 2 television that those who die of COVID are, in fact, the unvaccinated. This is the article from the German regional broadcaster MDR Fährenschein. German study, colon, the number of those suffering from serious complications after taking the COVID vaccine is 40 times higher than previously known. Charité in Berlin is carrying out a study on the side effects of receiving coronavirus vaccines. Professor Harald Matthäus is leading the research and is calling for more contact points for those affected. The following article... I double-clipped there. So the Germans have found that the number of adverse events... Oopsies! I'm sure the Germans have also been telling, I think they've got 170 million of their citizens have gotten these jabs. Oopsies, they're finding that the safe and effective narrative's falling apart in Germany as they find that the adverse events reporting there is 40 times higher than they said it was. 40 times higher. The difference between the United States and places like Germany, and more in just a second about other countries and their research, is that at least Germany will come out with the truth. They bought into the Big Pharma propaganda in Germany. But the media outlet, you know, the media outlet that's reporting that, what's the difference between the media outlet in Germany and the media outlet in the United States? The media outlet in Germany is coming out and telling you to your face, to all the citizens of Germany, oopsies. It turns out that adverse events are 40 times higher, not 40% higher, 40 times higher than we thought. While the American media is completely silent on things like this, what's the difference between German media and American media? Pharmaceutical companies cannot advertise on German television, direct to consumer. Only the United States and New Zealand allow direct to consumer advertising, and that's why our media has been hopelessly corrupted by Big Pharma. This was interesting. Well, there's several. Well, let me get to this. Yeah. This was from 2018. 2018 about masking. Let me tell you who this person is, because obviously they wouldn't dare say a thing like this today. But back then, they did this in public. This is a wonderful explanation of the real rationale for masking here. This is Laurie Garnett. She made this speech to the National Academy of Medicine in 2018, a public address to the National Academy of Medicine in 2018. And one of the reasons I think this is important is because people need to understand that your medical professionals knew that masks did nothing prior to 2020. Now, I don't know if they were scared to speak out and say, hey, wait a second, just a year ago, we knew these things didn't work. Why would they suddenly work? A virus is a virus is a virus is a virus. This coronavirus isn't a different size. It's not like a ping pong ball that'll bounce off of a mask. Masks are no good for viral transmission. Were they scared to actually say that, or did they just believe in the cult? A lot of your doctors, up to and including today, are still wearing masks, I'm sure. But again, this is a public address to the National Academy of Medicine in 2018. And I think it bolsters a Mike Madison point here.
There's only a couple of countries that have ever really done large-scale studies to try and figure out what might work. Japan, it may not surprise you, is one of them. And they, in one of their large studies, they basically showed that the masks, it seemed like the major efficacy of a mask is that it causes alarm in the other person. And so you stay away from each other. And that's what I think happened with SARS. When I was in the SARS epidemic, I saw everywhere all over Asia, people started wearing these masks. And it is alarming when you walk down a street and everybody coming towards you has a mask on. You definitely do social distancing. You definitely, it's just a gut thing. But did the mask really help them? Did the mask keep the virus out? Almost certainly not. If the virus was in their around their face, the mask would not have made the difference.
Okay. Again, that is an address to the National Academy of Medicine, a public address. This is not a whistleblower coming from behind the scenes. No, this was common knowledge in the medical establishment that masks do nothing to prevent viral transmission. Now, what I said at the time was that I thought the purpose of the mask was just to keep you afraid, to remind you to be afraid of something so that you would accept all kinds of other orders and it would soften your obedience across a whole host of other things that were taking place. But it was always about reminding you, because I knew after just a few months of COVID, if everybody had just ditched the mask, which were quite obviously doing nothing, there's not a single chart I've ever seen where mask usage and high mask compliance mitigated the spread of anything. And so it was apparent they weren't working. But I said, they can't let you out of the mask because they want you to stay in fear. It needs to be a constant reminder. If you were to go in the grocery store and nobody was wearing a mask, you might actually forget there's a disease because nobody that you know is dying from it. Oh, a few people have got something akin to a bad cold or a flu. But you would really forget that this disease that they tell you is this existential threat to the United States. You would forget it's even around. But they kept the masks on you to keep you in that mindset of fear. And what she says is that really, the only efficacy of the mask may be that when you see somebody in a mask, it has you draw back a few inches, right? You're not face-to-face with somebody. You're not a close talker, to use a Seinfeld reference. The problem with that is that they have also done studies and said social distancing, this 6 foot is just ridiculous. 6 foot, 60 feet, doesn't really matter. Proper ventilation can make some difference. But in a closed space, people breathing into a closed space with an aerosolized suspended virus, really doesn't matter if you're 6 feet, 8 feet, 12 feet, 2 feet, really doesn't matter. Now, mouth to mouth to somebody for an extended period of time, probably going to transmit the disease. You might not want to go and French kiss all the strangers that you meet for the course of a day. But the idea of social distancing a few more inches one way or the other made absolutely no difference whatsoever. But that is a public address to the National Academy of Medicine in 2018 saying, oh, the mask most certainly did not work. They did not work at all. When I come back, athletes. Athletes have been dropping on sports fields around the world. It's been reported on some media. Again, not on ours. I played some of it in Australian, where the little five-person sports casting, just like an ESPN set here in the United States, they started talking about it. And I realized then, too, of course, they are free to do that in Australia because pharmaceutical advertising is not allowed direct-to-consumer in Australia, so they don't lose sponsors. The sponsors don't dictate what they talk about in Australia, so they've had these conversations. But I've always had one big question about these athletes dropping on the field. I wanted some level of context. Well, now we've got it. We'll look at the reports and the studies they've done that answer that question for me. Be right back. Tell you what, I'm going to get to these athletes' deaths after the top of the hour because I might need a little bit more time to really look at these studies. But I did want to bring this up when it comes to the COVID stuff. We need to name and shame these people and make sure that they are out of our lives for forever. The left, people who embraced the COVID cult, need to be woken up. Here's a good story to wake them up. When you want to know why we chose this pharmacological intervention in COVID, where basically all of your rights are stripped from you until you took the jab. Now, the news on the jab is coming out so bad now that they're having to retreat from that a tad bit. But it doesn't mean that it's over. They're still going to recommend. This is probably going to be an annual shot now. They're just going to settle in. Biden is asking for another $22.5 billion to purchase more of these shots. It's almost to the point now, if they won't put them in people's arms, but they just pay off the pharmaceutical companies to leave us alone, that's almost preferable. It's disgusting corruption, but it's better than harming a bunch of people for no good reason. But how about this? An estimated $350 million in undisclosed royalties were paid to the National Institutes of Health and hundreds of its scientists, including the agency's recently departed director, Dr. Francis Collins, and Dr. Anthony Fauci, the mini Mengele, according to a nonprofit government watchdog. Quote, we estimate that up to $350 million in royalties from third parties were paid to NIH scientists during the fiscal years between 2010 and 2020. This is before what we just saw in this latest vaccination program. Open the Books CEO Adam Andrzejewski told reporters in a telephone news conference on May 9th, quote, we saw that conclusion. We draw that conclusion because in the first 5 years, there has been $134 million that we've been able to quantify of top line numbers that flowed from third party payers, meaning pharmaceutical companies or other payers, to NIH scientists. Now, I want you to listen to the great gig these people have got. I mean, this is serious graft. Quote, when an NIH employee makes a discovery in their official capacity, the NIH owns the rights to any resulting patent. These patents are then licensed for commercial use to companies that could use them to bring products to the market. Employees are listed as inventors on the patent and receive a share of the royalties obtained through any licensing or technology transfer of their inventions, essentially. And this is what should really anger the American people. Essentially, taxpayer money funding of NIH research benefits researchers employed by NIH because they are listed as patent inventors and therefore receive royalty payments from licenses. The NIH uses taxpayer funds. They steal from you every year, about a third of your income every year. Now, so that doesn't all go to the NIH. You got to wet the beaks of the defense industry, pharmaceutical companies, everybody else. I mean, everybody's wetting their beak in your salary. But the NIH takes their nice little chunk of taxpayer cash, and they just diddle around in the lab until they discover something. Now, what you would think is this is taxpayer-funded stuff, so any technologies that come from that should be, you know, you got to pay a company to create the product, to maybe market the product, to distribute the product. But you think you would maybe share that, the revenue on that, with the taxpayer, with the U.S. Treasury. Put it back in there so you can lower our taxes, because after all, it was our money that funded the invention in the first place. But no, that's not the way it goes. These government employees that risk nothing. They risk nothing. They steal money from you. They use that stolen money to do all kinds of little experiments in their lab. And when they hit on something that they think will work, never really does, but it's marketable, so they can patent it, sell it to a pharmaceutical, or license it to a pharmaceutical company, and they get kickbacks for the rest of their life on that thing as long as it's used. You paid for it. They get the royalties. Now, that's a good gig, I got to tell you. Anybody out there that wants to just start sending me a bunch of money, I got a bunch of business ideas I'd really like to try out. And it'd be great if I didn't have to take any personal risk myself. I don't want to go out and have to borrow money or save money to do it. If you wouldn't mind sending me a giant wad of cash to let me explore my ideas for a business and don't have a problem with me reaping all of the whirlwind from, I mean, all of the profits from that, then I'm open. You can look on our website, WYAB.com, get the address and start sending checks. Because that's what you're doing to the NIH. You're funding their research so they can profit off the inventions at your expense. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. Going to learn a little something, or at least I did. Have you ever heard of the School of the Americas? I was not aware of this little organization. If the southern border is one of your issues, this is something you should pay attention to. It's deep. I know it's much easier to just see a bunch of people coming across our southern border, understanding the problems with that, and wanting to build a wall to keep them all out, but it's such a much more complicated complex issue than that. And I hate to bring complexity to what people like, which is a good simple issue, but if you want to know what's creating a lot of the problems on our southern border, you need to stay tuned and listen to the School of the Americas and exactly what that is. This is some interesting research to me, hopefully to you too. But I wanted to get to this real quick. I've been paying attention to these stories about athletes around the world dropping dead or collapsing on the field of play. And it seems concerning to me when you've got an experimental shot that's going around and one of the known side effects of it is that it can cause heart problems. Seems connected. But, I believe in really finding out the truth. And there was some context lacking from this. And the context being, you know, sometimes when you're looking for something, you'll see it everywhere. If you're looking for a new car, and you're considering certain brand of car, and you're looking, you see this car everywhere. It draws your attention to it. It's not because there's more on the road. It's because you're paying attention to it. So I didn't really know the context of the number of athletes who suffer these heart problems on the field of play. I'm also somewhat questioning of this because one of my fraternity brothers at age 20, collapsed on a, I believe it was the flag football field of play. Went out one afternoon to play. People came back to the fraternity house crying. And this guy had collapsed on the field at age 20, a very fit, very healthy looking guy. He had had an undiagnosed heart problem. He collapsed on the field. They were not able to resuscitate him, and it was just absolute tragedy. One of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in your life passed away at age 20 playing flag football in college. So these things do happen. So I've always been wanting some level of context. I see the stuff going on in the field. I've heard from people who have had long careers in particularly like soccer in Europe. Guys have come out and said or tweeted. They've said, look, I've been in professional sports for 20 years. I've never seen anybody collapse on the field before. Suddenly now, you know, personally, I know five guys. That kind of thing. That's anecdotal, but it is concerning. And I do believe we've had a problem, but I've always wanted some level of context. Now we have the context. As I say, the reason to cover these things now is because while it seems like there's a lull in COVID coverage, there's a reason for that. And that's because the news is going against the narrative and it's showing the dangers across the board of masking, of social distancing, of lockdowns, and of course of these shots. That's why it's quiet now. And that's why we need to talk about it again. So has there been a big increase, or do professional athletes around the world, I mean, I haven't been following some minor league soccer team, or as they refer to it as football, I haven't been following semi-professional football in Italy. So when I hear of some semi-professional footballer in Italy collapsing on the field, what do I know? Maybe that happens every single year. There are a lot of soccer players in the world. It is the number one sport in the world, I believe. It seems concerning to me when you've got a shot being administered to these kids and you know one of the express dangers of these things are heart problems. It seems to connect, but again, sometimes we are looking for things and we want to believe things so badly that we don't actually continue to do the due diligence to find out if it really is a problem. Spoiler alert, it really is a problem. Now they've done the research. The International Olympic Committee in Lausanne, Switzerland, studied documents from international data banks from 1966 to 2004. Again, I'm going to call attention to the fact that this was done, a study in Switzerland. Not in Washington, D.C., not in Virginia, not at the University of California. This is another thing. We've got to go overseas to try to get some clarity on any of these issues because our country is completely corrupted by the pharmaceutical industry. These documents that the IOCC studied indicate 1,101 sudden deaths in athletes under 35 years of age. This is, again, between 1966 and 2004. An average of 29 athletes per year. The sports with the highest incidence being soccer and basketball. And that's from an NIH document. A study by Marone on sudden death in U.S. athletes from 1980 to 2006 in 38 sports identified 1,866 deaths of athletes with cardiac disease with a prevalence of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. 2005 to 2006 averaged 66 deaths per year, with 82% of those occurring during competition or training. So here's what we've got here. We've got from 2005 to 2006, a one-year period, 66 deaths. The IOC was studying from 1966 to 2004, and they found an average of 29 athletes per year collapsing on the field of play due to heart problems. I would submit to you that the poorer nutrition that we have, the more chemicals, the more unhealthy that we are right now, even our young athletes who are still eating garbage food and GMOs and stuff, may be this slight rise from 29 athletes per year from 1966 to 2004, and in 2005-2006, 66 deaths. I would say there's a possibility that just really abjectly poor nutrition in the Western world is seeing this slight uptick. I mean, that's a doubling. Now, here's the kicker. In this story, they have documented 779 athletes between February of 2021 and March of 2022. 779 publicly documented, meaning it's probably has not captured every single death on the field of play of an athlete. These are young athletes. I believe it's under 40 years old, I believe. So between 1966 to 2004, you had 29 athletes per year die. 2005 to 2006, you had 66 deaths that year, with 82% of those occurring during competition or training. In this past year, between February of 2021 and March 2022, 779 documented cases of athletes collapsing and dying on the field. Not all of them died. I don't want to say that. I think 500 of those 779 actually died. 279 of them required care. Most of them, their careers are over in professional sports and amateur sports. This goes into kids' stuff, too. So we've gone from 66 deaths to 779. My public school math says that's somewhere around a 12 times what would have been considered normal just a couple of years ago. So that's the context I've been looking for. We've got a problem. These athletes, I played a clip yesterday from a dad. His son had been stripped of his life because the schools closed down, took away his friends, his social gatherings, all of his milestones, graduations, dances, and sports. He was a hockey player. And when they started opening back up, this kid was so excited. He'd been stripped of his life for a year, unable to play hockey with his buddies. And he just wanted to play hockey, but the hockey people said, in order to come out here and play hockey, your child, who I believe was 18 at the time, has to take the jab. forced him to take the jab. A healthy 18-year-old athlete. They forced him to take the jab because that's what we do. He took the jab, and within a month, he was dead, this 18-year-old athlete. See, he's just one of these 779 that are on this list. The facts are in now. Something has happened during February of 2021. Gee, golly gee, willikers, what happened at the beginning of 2021 that continued through March of 2022 that could possibly explain a 12x, 12 times the number of athletes dropping on the field of play? Perfectly coincides with the vaccine program. So this is the context I've been looking for, just to make sure that I wasn't just seeing not what I wanted to see, like I want to see athletes drop dead, but I'm suspicious of this grand experiment, and I believe it's been very dangerous. I believe the silence on VAERS is deafening. But this is the context I've been looking for. The studies are in. Somewhere between 30 and 60 deaths a year has been historical for athletes. In the past year, 779. You heard anything about this on the mainstream media? I didn't think so. That's why we cover it here. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know?
She was with her. All right, I'm going to do a little bit of a short segment here covering some Russia stuff. There was Russia had their Victory Day celebration. This is attached to World War II. And there was a lot of expectation that maybe Vladimir Putin would declare war, maybe on the United States or on NATO. There was expected to be a nuclear bomber flyover. What's really interesting about the Western media, which really seems just intent on trying to provoke and humiliate Putin into acting aggressively. So Putin didn't do these things. He didn't declare war. He didn't fly a nuclear-capable bomber over the parade grounds. Now, you would think that would be good news, right? He's not accelerating. He's not exacerbating the problem. He's not showing a subtle threat of a nuclear exchange. What did the Western media do? They reported it like, oh, the now humbled, severely affected, degraded. I believe one of the news stories said, just in a show of how badly degraded Russia's military is, there was no B-50, you know, their equivalent of the B-52 or B-2 nuclear bomber. They basically said, because he didn't declare war and because he didn't show off his nuclear tools and threaten the West with nuclear war, that just shows how weak he is. Yeah, how sick that is. We should be happy. It's one of those things where, you know, you would think, oh, well, this is a positive sign. At least he's not trying to widen the war and take it into a nuclear direction. But instead, our media pokes at him and goes, aha, see, you can't even do it. You can't even pull out your nuclear hardware because you're so scared of us. I mean, it is just, it's bizarre to watch. There's been almost no reporting that I've seen on what Putin said during his speech on Victory Day. But I'll just read it to you because this could be Russian propaganda. I don't know. But this is what he said. I think it would be kind of important. What the United States does is we lob accusations, and then when there's a response, we stick our fingers in our ears and we walk away going, nah, 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 I can't, you're talking, but I cannot hear you. You are talking, but I cannot hear you. It's the most childish thing. We walked out of the G20 when the Russian representative started to speak. If the Russians speak at the UN, we walk out. You would think you'd want to engage with the other nuclear power that's involved in the confrontation right now. What we do is just talk, 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 and when they try to talk back, we just turn and walk away. It's childlike, but it's so much more dangerous than that. Putin said, this is what he said in his Victory Day speech. He said, quote, NATO didn't listen to us. They were preparing to attack Crimea. A clash with neo-Nazis was inevitable. Russia struck back preemptively against aggression. He spelled out that the West was, quote, preparing for the invasion of our land, including Crimea. Defending the motherland, when its fate is being decided, has always been sacred, he told assembled veterans, troops, and officers, quote, today you are fighting for our people in Donbass, for the security of Russia, our homeland. So what Putin told his people was the reason that we went into Ukraine, It's not because we just wanted to take over Ukraine. It's because the West and the Ukrainian forces were planning an attack. They were going after Crimea. I don't know if this is true. I'm going to be looking into this. I've heard these accusations before. I don't know if anybody has provided any proof of this or not. This could be Russian propaganda. How many times do we hear this in the United States? We need to invade Iraq with 250,000, 400,000 soldiers because they got weapons of mass destruction. They're going to use them any day now. So this could be absolutely Russian propaganda, or he could be right. The only thing we know for sure is that the West, NATO, the United States, Great Britain, we lie every time we open our mouths about any of this stuff. So we know our side is lying. Now, I suspect that the Russian government lies as well. Matter of fact, I'm pretty darn sure the Russian government lies. But we know the U.S. lies about everything when it comes to war. I've got a whole segment that I've been doing for years on Friday showing you all of the various lies about war. More on that in just a couple of minutes. But there was also this one little story I wanted to throw in there. I guess we have emptied out the shelves of the old military hardware. This is one of the great scams that we are doing right now. Essentially, we've been clearing out all the old weapons and just giving them to Ukraine. A lot of countries have been doing this. Other NATO countries have been doing the same thing. And then we have to restock the shelves with anyone? New products provided to us by the military-industrial complex, the defense industry. Well, I guess we're done with that. We're actually going into some new stuff now. On Monday, the Washington Post is reporting that for the first time, the Pentagon will provide Ukrainian forces, quote, high-precision laser-guided weapons. It's part of the recently approved Mammoth Arms Package to Ukraine. As expected, defense contractors will continue seeing a windfall of profits. Quote, the Pentagon is expanding delivery of commercially available weapons and military equipment in Ukraine, detailing on Friday its $136 million purchase of aerial drones, laser-guided rockets, binoculars, and other items set for shipment soon. So, I've taken it upon myself, on behalf of those people who don't seem to rightfully thank the U.S. taxpayer, the Nazis in Ukraine want to thank the American taxpayer for all of the endless streams of weapons. But now it looks like we're going to some of the new stuff. I guess we have cleared out all the shelves of all the old surplus stuff so that we can make room for budget-busting new arms purchases from Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and United Technologies and the rest of that group that Eisenhower warned us about. And now we're just shipping some of these things out. Down in this story, it says essentially some of these weapons packages, these aid packages to Ukraine, the money never actually goes to Ukraine. It just goes straight to our defense industry. Now, they peel a little bit of that off, kick it back to Biden, to the Democrats, to the Republicans. Lindsey Graham is asking for more, too. Mitch McConnell can't give away our money fast enough, so it's both parties. So the defense industry gets tens of billions of dollars of orders. They peel off a few million off each order. They send it right back to Washington, D.C., and the game continues. Well, that's where we are. Now, I can't imagine Russia is real happy to see, this is reported in plain sight, that now we're providing laser-guarded, guided missiles to Ukraine. So every Russian that is killed with a laser-guided missile, the Russians will know exactly who's behind that. I don't think we would accept that if the Russians had provided arms to the Taliban in Afghanistan, but we expect that Russia, you know what it really comes down to? We hope and pray that Vladimir Putin does not act like an American in the foreign policy establishment. We have got to hope and pray that Vladimir Putin is more restrained than your Mike Pompeos or your Lloyd Austins or some of the defense contractors like Mark Esper that was in the Defense Department, ran the Defense Department under Trump. We've got to hope that Vladimir Putin has not gotten his tools of how to initiate or how to lock horns with another power. We have to hope he has no traits like the American foreign policy establishment. Because if the American foreign policy establishment, if the shoe was on the other foot, we would have already started World War III. There's no doubt about it. We would have put up with none of this. We have the American foreign policy here. So there we go, providing more advanced weaponry to Ukraine. And I hate to say it, you know who kicked that off, don't you? It was Donald Trump. He's the one that broke the ban on offensive weapons to Ukraine. That probably made Putin a little more nervous, having all these new weapons flow into Ukraine during the Trump administration. after the Obama administration had overthrown the government in 2014. This is some scary stuff. Scary stuff. When I come back, we're going to get into this, what's referred to as the School of Dictators. It is the School of the Americas. I was not familiar with this little operation. Pretty fascinating little scam they're running on us. The problem is it affects just millions and millions of people in Southern and Central America. And when it affects these people, the tragedies that befall them in these countries, guess where they come? That's right. If you really care about the southern border, this is another one of those things like health, like any of these other things. Why don't you start looking for the cause rather than trying to tamp down the symptom, which is people pouring across the border? This is just a sick game, and I've kind of figured it out. I've laid it out. It's like 8 points. Lather, rinse, repeat. This is how the United States continues these crises to keep these wars going all around the world, particularly in Southern and Central America. It's quite something to listen to. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with us. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am an anti-war guy. I don't make any bones about that. I'm not just against this war, but for that war, I'm just anti-war. I believe Smedley Butler, when he gives us his 30 years of experience in the Marine Corps back at the turn of the century, not this century, but the last one, where he said, "Oh my gosh, I just realized I was a gangster for a bunch of corporations." And he wrote the piece, War is a Racket. I encourage everybody to read that and understand he was the highest decorated Marine of his time. And he realized the scam that had been run. And he particularly was operating in Central and South America, and we're going to talk about that in a second. One of the things that will really get conservatives going is the idea of fighting communism. And I understand that. I don't want communism here. I don't like the fact that they teach some of this stuff in our schools. I explained to you, I understand why our youth are turning to it, because we have left them such a monumental mess and called it capitalism, allowed them to frame what's going on right now as capitalism. So, of course, if kids are getting out of school, they're struggling to survive, home ownership's long sailed past majority of them, of course they're going to look for something besides capitalism. I try to explain, I don't believe this is capitalism. There are capitalist elements, particularly on Main Street, that's capitalism. You can lose everything you've got, but when you get to a certain level, you never lose. If you start to lose, you get bailed out. That's not capitalism, that's cronyism, it's corporatism. That's what we're living under right now. We've been there for a long time. So conservatives will get very up in arms about fighting against communism, and this has happened a lot in Central and South America. And we have set up this organization, this military outreach program, called the School of the Americas. I don't think I was familiar with this thing, which is strange because obviously I study a lot of these things. But I ran across a story about how Americans right now, Russia has got the Azov Brigade surrounded in this this power plant in Azovstal or something like that. It's in the Mariupol area. And the Americans are cheering for these poor Ukrainian soldiers who are holed up in this thing as the Russians overtake this plant. It's happening, I believe, probably as we speak. The Russians, all of the people that the Ukrainian army had been using as human shields have been let go. They have been given safe passage during a couple of days of ceasefire, and now the Russians are dispatching with this Azov Brigade. Americans believe that this is horrible Russian aggression, and this story that I was reading was all about the whitewashing of these elements in Ukraine, like the Azov Brigade, that are professed Nazis. And how amazing it is to see Americans brought to supporting, funding, providing weapons to, and sympathies for Nazi elements in Ukraine. You know, it's really hard to believe, except I have to keep reminding myself that most people are completely ignorant of this stuff. They won't listen to anybody that explains this to them because they've already put the yellow and blue flag on their Facebook page or their Twitter handle. They're in. They cannot be dissuaded now. Facts be damned. But we are actually right now watching a situation where our American media is convinced large swaths of the American public to support the Nazi side of a conflict, while at the same time accusing anybody we disagree with being a horrific Nazi. It's bizarre. So I was reading the story about the whitewashing of the Nazis and how Americans have been conditioned and convinced for their sympathies to lie with the actual Nazis who were ethnically cleansing Russians in Ukraine just a few months ago. And somebody mentioned in the comments section down there a link to this thing about the School of the Americas. Now, the School of the Americas, there was a piece written back in 1998, I believe it was. In the New York Times, most of us can't really remember. The New York Times used to be a decent newspaper that used to actually report news and do investigations. This story was actually September 29th of 1996, and it was written, the title of it was School of the Dictators. Now, I haven't read this. I just pulled it up because I was paywalled out of it yesterday, and I'm sure as hell not giving the New York Times a nickel of my money. But it wasn't the only source for this stuff. It's called the School of the Americas, and I believe it was originally set up in Panama and was moved to Fort Benning, Georgia. And what the School of Americas is it was set up to be this cooperative area where we could take Southern and Central American countries and help train their soldiers so that they will help us fight off communism in these small countries. Now, this is a great rallying cry to sell any kind of adventurism, war stuff to conservatives, because you feel like, yeah, we don't want communism creeping up our borders. Of course, we think it's bad that Russia's upset that we're moving into Ukraine and expanding NATO into Poland right on their borders and all this other stuff. We expect them to put up with that, but we don't want any communist country developing anywhere in Central or even South America. It's very interesting. It seems wildly hypocritical to me for us to say we need several thousand miles of buffer between us and anybody that chooses communism, and we're willing to fight to the death to stop that communism, but we expect Russia to take our troops right on their border without acting out. Very, very bizarre stuff. But here is the formula that I kind of figured out with reading this, and I'm going to play a clip in just a second about some of the graduates of this School of the Americas that the United States military, the Pentagon, puts on and trains Central and Southern American mercenaries. Well, they're not mercenaries. They're actually the military of these places. They train the generals. By the tens of thousands, your tax dollars are being used to train these armies in Central and South America. So here's the formula, as I see it. Another critical piece to this is reading the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. If you're not a reader, I'll admit I didn't read the book, but I got the audio book, and it's a fascinating story. So if you're driving around and you want something entertaining, get Confessions of an Economic Hitman, the original version from John Perkins, where he explains what he did with the IMF, with the World Bank. So here is how it goes. So studying this School of the Americas, where we train essentially Central and Southern American dictators how to put down any people's revolts there. And usually these are right-wing dictators. And so the average conservative mind goes, oh, that's great. We got a right-wing guy down there. They're beating back the communists. Well, I don't want communism either. But these right-wing things, they're not Jeffersonian democracies they're trying to maintain. Here is the playbook here. I've got, it looks like, about eight steps to it. Number one, a nation has resources that are profitable. I don't care what it is, bananas, sugar, cocoa, cocaine. It doesn't matter what it is. A nation has these resources that are profitable. So large corporate interests bribe the leaders of these countries to exploit these resources. They go into these countries and they go, look, you know, you got a bunch of diverse banana farmers. They're just a bunch of, you know, families making money off these bananas. They're not real efficient. I mean, I know they're supporting themselves that way, but you need to give all the banana stuff to us. Maybe that's Dole or United Fruit was a big one that I think Smedley Butler pointed out that he was a gangster for. So these corporate interests go in. It can also, of course, be oil or other rare minerals. It doesn't matter what the country is. Doesn't really matter where it is, but we're talking particularly about Central and South America. A country has natural resources. A corporation goes in, they bribe the leadership, they start taking, exploiting that country for its resources. Now, a lot of you will hear this and think I'm some kind of a leftist. No, this is just what happens. This is just what happens. The big corporations that do these things, that actually perpetuate these wars, whether it's oil companies in the Middle East, any of the defense contractors, they're not your friends. You understand their entire way of life, the opulence that they achieve, is done largely due to the money extracted from you on a yearly basis. And what are you doing for the oil companies right now? You're paying the highest gas prices in the history of the United States. All those wars you funded in the Middle East over war, over oil, over pipelines, and here you are getting shafted at the gas pumps. These people are not your friends. So a nation has these resources. These large corporate interests go in. They bribe the leadership that's in there if they can. This doesn't always work. And this is where the economic hitmen come in. But they bribe them and they say, okay, well, suddenly now United Fruit or whatever is in control of the banana trade here. And all of the family farmers in these areas that have for decades or centuries have been farming on their land, basically they're cut off and these big corporate interests move in. Now, here's what happens. The people get tired of living in a country with a low standard of living while their resources are being extracted by these large corporate interests. And I could spend a couple of shows going through example after example after example of this. So they rise up and they vote in a populist leader, and most people here should be kind of familiar with that. That's what we did with Donald Trump, right? Because these leaders go to South America, they rise up, and typically they may come from the left, but they understand that these corporate interests, which they view as capitalism, which I say is not capitalism, bribing a leader, using the country's military to protect a corporation to extract resources, that's not capitalism. Capitalism is going to a country and going, hey, we think we can help your country. We think we can market the bananas better than you. We can take them more efficiently. Let's strike a deal. That's capitalism. Going in and bribing a leader and then getting him to use his military to move indigenous farmers off their land so that the corporation can go in and exploit the area. That's not capitalism. That's cronyism. That's corporatism. So a populist leader rises up and says, look, these corporations are in our country. These are all our stuff. It's our oil, it's our bananas, it's our lithium, whatever it is. It needs to be used for the benefit of us. We are living in abject poverty here while these people are taking the great wealth out of our country. And these populist leaders rise up. That's when this new populist leader is set upon by the economic hitman. Because the people eventually vote these people in. And the people that were originally bribed to let the corporate interest in are run out on a rail. A lot of times they got to go out into exile because they've made so many of their people angry. Now, the new leader, the new populist leader, either takes a bribe to keep the big corporate exploitation going, or they get killed or overthrown. So the Western powers, using these graduates from this school of the Americas, they come in and they start coups against these populist leaders. Now, I might not agree with these leaders on everything. Some of them may be abject socialists. They will fail on their own if they are able to do it, but they are representing a bunch of people who just look around and go, this is not fair. And so we go in, we foment some level of a coup, and then we put in a strong man. The populist leader is removed, and a strong man dictator is put in. Now, the people rebel against this strong man dictator because after this, there's a lot of dissatisfied people who see, hey, we got together, we elected this populist because he said he's going to restore our rights to our own natural resources here, and they came in and they assassinated him or they overthrew him. This is not fair. They are angry. So this new strongman that's been installed by the West, typically the United States, then proclaims, these people are all communists, and they're trying to take back this government. I am a right-wing leader. And so they set up military dictatorships and they start slaughtering people. Then the U.S., the U.S. or the West declares this war on communism in order to prop up the right-wing corrupt governments down there. And there's no real ideology to these people. They're called right wing because they're opposing what could be considered a left wing populist movement. But it's not like they're Jeffersonian democracies. They're considered right wing only because they are targeting anybody who disagrees with them and calling them radical leftists. And sometimes there are bad communists there. But when you create a really corrupt system, just like we've got in the United States, I'm explaining to you why the youth of today want socialism and communism, because they're looking out at the landscape and going, well, this is sure as hell corrupt. Now, they lack economic understanding that communism and socialism don't work. And in third world countries, the same thing happens. We've seen communist governments rise up, and then the totalitarian of a communist government is brutal on its people. But these people are crying out for something. They've been raped for so long by these big corporate interests. And then we just lather, rinse, repeat. As long as they've got natural resources, God, it must be the biggest curse in the world to be a small country with exploitable resources in this world. And it's not just the U.S. that does this, but the U.S. has perfected it using particularly this school of the Americas. And the funny thing is, we call this spreading or protecting democracy. And then here's the diabolical thing about it. The people who are terrorized by these dictators that are put into power, and I'm going to play a clip in just a second. Man, I'm going to run short on time, but I'm going to do it anyway. The people that are terrorized by these governments that are put in place and become strongman governments that the U.S. support because they allow the corporate interests to go in there and exploit these countries, the people that are terrorized, and you'll hear some of the numbers in a second, where the brutal military dictatorships, they scare the crap out of people. People can't make a living in these countries anymore because the big interests that have bribed the governments are taking everything, basically everything. They actually have to flee their country. Guess where they flee? They come to the United States. They go north. Trying to escape this corruption and this violence, they come up here. The violence that we have actually been supporting down in these Central and Southern American countries. And the Americans, just like everything else, we don't understand any of these things. We don't understand that we create the conditions that have people fleeing for their lives. And instead, we just look at them pouring across the borders thinking they're just coming to take our stuff. Now, I don't want uncontrolled immigration. Don't get me wrong. But maybe if we stop doing what we're doing in South and Central America, maybe there wouldn't be so many people fleeing for their lives, looking for the relative safety of the United States, at least as long as we have it. I got to take a break. I'm going to come back and play a clip from this story about this School of the Americas. I probably should have saved a whole show for this thing. It is diabolical. Be right back. All right, final segment for the day. You know, this is not an easy topic, and you know, I'm fully aware that this can be, that this can sound, because most people don't understand nuance. They don't understand issues really in any depth. It sounds like, well, you're anti-business, pro-communist. No, what it is, it's the globalist. I should use that term. These globalist corporations that go around and exploit, they're exploiting the United States. The pharmaceutical company is exploiting the United States. They bought off our government. Are you happy with them? No. Well, these things happen in these southern countries, and just like they react the same way that we are reacting right now. We're sick of it. We're sick of it. And the reason you're seeing young people here, it's like these globalists create the conditions for socialism and communism to take root, because they're viewed as capitalist. They're not. They're corporatist. They're cronyist. But they're viewed as capitalist, and they so abuse the country where they are that the people look around for the exact opposite of what they're going through then. The problem is that the American Pentagon has been propping up these globalists all through Central and South America. Here's a short clip. I don't have near enough time to flesh this out. This is a clip by Abby Martin about some of the graduates of the School of the Americas.
The link between the School of the Americas and widespread war crimes in El Salvador was undeniable. The 1992 United Nations Commission on the Truth for El Salvador found SOA graduates prominent among both the rank and file and leaders of all the most high-profile assassinations and massacres. One report found that on March 12, 1981, U.S.-backed death squads massacred everyone they could find in the village of El Junquillo. Over 70 civilians were murdered, 40 of them children.
all of the women in the village were raped before being executed, including girls under the age of 12. Of the three officers cited by the UN, two were SOA graduates.
Somehow, the Salvadorian military topped this horrific massacre tenfold.
On December 11, 1981, they surrounded the village of El Mozote and held every person inside at gunpoint. Men and young boys were separated and brought into rooms to be brutally tortured. Women and girls as young as 10 were brought into other rooms to be raped. In the end, every single person was executed, an estimated 800 civilians. Even the children as young as 2 years old were hung from trees with their throats slit. 12 officers were cited by the UN. 10 were SOA graduates.
So I don't have near enough time to get into this. And there are people out there who say, oh, you're just one of these blame America people. Look, when we're guilty of doing something horrific on behalf of the globalist, yeah, I'm going to call it out. And unfortunately, that's American foreign policy. I've got links to this stuff if you're interested in here, you know, watching this entire video about what the School of the Americas is. It is basically gangster behavior run by the Pentagon to unleash psychopaths on Central and South America. And then these people flee these kinds of atrocities for their lives. And where do they go? They come here. Building a wall is not going to stop that. If you keep kicking over the ant's nest south of our borders, they're going to keep flowing up here. Dictator after dictator after dictator has been involved in this academy up here, has brutalized his people, and now the people flee for their lives, not to mention the ridiculous war on drugs, and it accomplishes a similar thing. These people in these countries have got resources. They could leave prosperous lives and want to stay exactly where they are. Nobody wants to pick up and move a couple thousand ways to a strange land where you don't speak the language, but they do. They're running for their lives. And a lot of times it's because of our foreign policy establishment. It's all the time I got today. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.